Hey everyone, Turd Flinging Monkey, how you doing? My video MGTOW She'll Never Love You has by far been my most popular video, having about twice as many views as my second most popular video, and 3 to 5 times as many views as my average videos. What's funny is I never expected it to be that popular. It was meant to be a bridge within my Three Types of Feminism video series, and it was also one of my earliest videos, and not only is the audio quality terrible, but I hadn't yet figured out how to remove the breathing, swallowing, and noises from the audio. This will be a remastering and expansion on my She'll Never Love You video. If you're not into that sort of thing, just so you don't feel like you wasted a click, here's a video of a boy going down a hill on a snowboard and getting humped by a dog.
Oh, I made it!
Okay, so let's begin by establishing some foundational facts regarding human biology, especially in regards to the human brain, and build on that foundation a bit once we've laid the groundwork. Humans are animals. We, human beings, are animals. Specifically, we are mammals. We share numerous characteristics with other mammals, and even lesser animals found on Earth. Now, if you believe in God, this could be seen as a sign of a common creator. Kind of like the way you can identify an artist by similarities in their works. If you're an atheist, this is the product of evolution. As humans are the apex of evolution, our unique brains contain components taken from our primitive biological ancestors. Regardless of the origin of these similarities, their existence is undisputed. Knowing this allows us to look to the animal world to gain a greater understanding of our own instincts and behaviors, particularly those involving reproduction, as they are the most integral to any animal species for obvious reasons, and are thus contained in the most primitive part of our brain. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Our primitive instincts can easily override our rationality. Our highly developed brains, capable of rationality, invention, and self-awareness, are what make us the dominant life form on Earth. However, our brain is wired in such a way that our rationality can be overridden by our more primitive instincts and urges. Our brain is structured in 3 layers, each one built on top of the other, each one more complex than the other, but each one less able to control our decisions and behaviors than the other. The smallest and most primitive part of the brain is called the lizard brain or reptilian complex. It gets this name because this structure is found in lizards today. This part of the brain is in charge of biological functions such as regulating heart rate, breathing, balance, as well as survival and reproductive instincts. This layer of the brain is connected directly to the brainstem, and its functions are largely out of our conscious control. For example, you can consciously control your breathing, but it is largely automatic when you're not thinking about it, as is your heart rate and balance. In terms of reproductive instinct, this layer of the brain is responsible for those times when you've been quote-unquote thinking with your dick. When you did something completely irrational and possibly dangerous because all you could think of was to have sex. That was the lizard brain, and possibly alcohol, influencing you. The second part of the brain is known as the limbic system. This part of the brain is the emotional center of the brain, and is also in charge of the regulation of chemicals that cause pleasure, happiness, and adrenaline, as well as the formation of long-term memory and even your sense of smell. The limbic system is also in charge of those gut feelings that you can't rationally explain. This part of the brain is responsible for those times when you've quote-unquote followed your heart. You've made irrational and dangerous decisions because you were in love, or because it felt right. That was the limbic system influencing you. The third, final, and most advanced part of the brain is known as the neocortex. It is from this layer that we get our higher brain functions that define human beings. This is the layer where we get logic, reason, abstract thought, the ability to speak, read, write, and conscious control of our motor functions. Our instincts control us more than we think. Now that we understand how the brain works, we need to appreciate the fact that even in modern times, with all our technology and advancement, we are still largely controlled by primitive instincts and urges, so much so that it may shock you. Think about the last time you asked yourself why you wanted something. Was there a rational reason for your desire, or did you simply want it for some unexplainable reason, and when you got it, it made you happy and gave you pleasure? When this happens, realize that you are being manipulated by your more primitive brain, the limbic system in this case, and you didn't even realize it. But then again, why would you question it? They are your own thoughts after all, aren't they? Your thoughts, the thoughts coming from the more primitive parts of your brain, the parts responsible for emotion, memory, reproduction, and even happiness, have made you a slave. Your master are your urges, and they will lead you, as they have led countless men before you, to sacrifice yourself upon the altar of genetic reproduction. Many who recognize things in society, such as gynocentrism and male disposability, blame feminism, or believe that it was orchestrated by cultural Marxists, but they are wrong. The enemy that has enslaved men is not in the gender studies department of some university, or within some political party or ideology, but behind your eyes and inside your skull, and which is allowing you to hear and understand the words I'm speaking to you right now. The male bowerbird builds an intricate nest to attract a female, and the female, which only mates once a year, tours the bachelor pads of these would-be suitors, chooses the most impressive one, and rewards that male for his hard work with sex and reproduction. Another bird with similar simping behavior is the Eurasian jay, in which the male gives gifts of food to the female in order to impress her enough to earn the privilege of sex and reproduction. These behaviors did not come from some avian feminist movement, or winged cultural Marxist who've tainted the holy bond between male and female birds. They simply came from nature. Males, humans included, have been imprinted through our primitive brain with an irrational urge to compete with other males, acquire resources in order to attract a mate, and to reproduce and propagate our species. This pleases our lizard brain, and the limbic system floods our brains with dopamine and makes us feel pleasure and happiness as we fulfill these primitive urges, even at the cost of our long-term health and fulfillment. This is not rational choice, but rather primitive biologic impulse. While these impulses helped human beings climb to the top of the food chain and dominate all of their life forms on this planet, it was not without a cost, especially to men, who are naturally less valuable for reproduction than women. To demonstrate this, imagine a small tribe of 100 people, 50 men and 50 women. If they paired off into couples, the tribe could possibly grow by 50 people every 9 months or so. If 40 out of the 50 men died, the remaining 10 men could still impregnate all 50 of the women, meaning that the tribe could still grow by 50 people every 9 months or so. However, if 40 out of the 50 women died, the tribe could only grow by a maximum of 10 people every 9 months or so, a devastating loss to the tribe. And since there are 50 men and only 10 women, those 50 men will compete and possibly kill each other in order to gain reproductive access to the remaining women, thus damaging the tribe even further. This is why when a ship is sinking or a building is burning, that the women are saved first. It's not just an old-timey tradition harkening back to chivalry, but a biological imperative. Our instincts are to protect women, especially attractive and fertile women who have good genes. This is why women receive far less harsh sentences for the same crimes as men. Our lizard brain triggers an instinct to protect young, attractive, and fertile women. Even if you're happily married or gay, attractive women will trigger an instinct to be kind and protective to them. You want to protect them and you want to impress them because your lizard brain subconsciously wants to mate with them. Remember, the lizard brain operates on instinct and we cannot control our instincts, only recognize them. Women are just as much of a slave to their biological urges and instincts as men, but due to their roles as reproductive gatekeepers, their lot has always been less brutal than that of men. A woman's biological imperative drives her to seek out men with resources that they will provide for her as well as protection. This is known as hypergamy and has a biological basis. In the animal world, pregnant and nursing mothers are physically vulnerable and require more food than normal as they produce milk, especially if they give birth to multiple offspring. Since the female requires protection and additional food while nursing, it only makes sense that a woman's biological instincts would cause her to be attracted to men with resources and a dominating presence, either through their physique, demonstrating physical superiority, or through their take-no-bullshit alpha male bad boy attitude. All of these characteristics are attractive to women on an instinctual level. If resources are abundant enough, the female may not require a male to provide for her, and will join a harem of other females around males with the best genes, like an animal version of sister wives. How the environment and an abundance or absence of resources affects how females are attracted to the opposite sex is an interesting topic. If you want to know more, I'm linking to a Davis Arini video called RK Selection Theory in Practice. So, it's obvious that men and women have different biological drives. Men seek women for their health and fertility, primarily via visual cues such as youth and beauty. Meanwhile, women seek men for their resources and ability to protect and provide for them, primarily via social cues, such as a man's career and status. However, notice that there is an important disparity between what women and men seek. which brings us to the fourth truth and the reason for the title of this video. She'll never love you. Women don't love men. They can't love men. Their instincts and urges are not towards men themselves, but towards what men have and can provide for them and their children. Men and women are both shallow, but at least a man is interested in the woman herself. A young, beautiful woman is valued as a person because you can't separate a woman's youth and beauty from the woman herself. However, because a woman only loves what a man has, his resources, or the services that he can provide, she may be able to extract those resources for herself and leave the man face down in the gutter afterwards. A man's worth in the woman's eyes is a separate thing, and thus the man is not the true focus of her affection. Again, you see this in the animal kingdom. Male competition ensures that the strongest and fittest males have the most resources. Females join the harem of these strong and fit males to be impregnated by them. If the dominant male is overthrown by a rival male, the females will immediately begin having sex with the new dominant male without skipping a beat. These females have absolutely no loyalty to these men, even though the new dominant male will murder the children of the former male he's overthrown. The maternal instinct does not rise to the level that she will jeopardize her own provision from the new male. As long as they're getting provided for, fathers and children are wholly expendable and replaceable. Again, just to make the point, feminism and cultural Marxism didn't brainwash these female animals to abandon their mates and children in order to hypergamously submit to their new dominant male. It is simply nature. It is also in the female's best interest to be hypergamous. And even if she loses a few children in the transition, it is better for her to stay where she will be provided for rather than be cast out along with the previous male and starve to death along with her young. Remember that nursing females are vulnerable and require even more food than normal. It may seem evil or selfish, but morals have no place in nature. The female is not evil, she is doing what is in the best interest of the species, and that just happens to include male disposability. The only thing that is evil is to keep knowledge of this reality from men so that they are surprised when this happens. A woman's love only lasts for as long as the man is providing more for her than she can get elsewhere. But God forbid the man becomes sick, unemployed, or disabled and can no longer work, especially if the woman is still young and fertile. Now, women can love you in their own way, but it's the same amount of love someone might have for their car. The car provides them a valuable service, and if it's a luxury car, perhaps even additional benefits like status, pride, and happiness. However, once the car begins providing diminishing services, she will begin to seek a replacement if possible. Now, she may stay with her old car if she can't afford a better one, but she will no longer love the car. She will merely tolerate it as a necessary evil, resent it, and possibly even yell at it or hit it when it doesn't do what she wants it to. Is any of this sounding familiar? Now, let's say you understand all this, but you really want to have children. Until we get artificial wombs or cloning pods off the ground, we're stuck with women if we want to reproduce. So what is a man to do? My best advice is to be acutely aware of the risks involved and have your eyes open, free of any delusions of love. Think of it like a business relationship, because that's how women instinctually view relationships. A woman will only enter a relationship if it provides some tangible benefit. So if you're willing to enter a relationship for the benefit of children, consider the costs as well as the risks, and ask yourself if this is a good business decision, or if you're being manipulated into making a bad deal by your more primitive impulses. I'm going to link to a video from Sandman called Emotional Baggage. In this video, Sandman talks about how his father was in two serious relationships, including a previous marriage, before he met Sandman's mother. In the video, Sandman states that the primary reason his father married his mother was he wanted children, and his previous wife did not, which caused a divorce. Sandman goes as far as to say that his father used his mother. Now, in the comments section of my original video, I was able to get a little better understanding of this relationship directly from Sandman, who has since deleted his comments, but I'll recite what I remember. Sandman describes this seemingly dysfunctional relationship as one of mutual exploitation. Both his father and his mother were openly using each other, and yet they remained together after 40 years. It would be fascinating to know more about how this relationship that seems to go against everything we're taught in society regarding love and commitment can succeed, while over 50% of marriages fail. And unfortunately, I don't know anyone like Sandman's father, so I can only speculate. I will now speculate that based on what I do know, it sounds like he had the right idea regarding relationships. He approaches marriage like a business, which is fine and men are normally very good when it comes to making business deals. But due to our primitive brain hijacking our rationality when it comes to relationships, our common sense goes right out the window and we make terrible deals, risking everything simply to have sexual and reproductive access to an attractive young female. Under normal circumstances, a man would evaluate the costs and benefits of entering into such a commitment, but our lizard brain takes over. Reproduce, says the lizard brain. It will give you pleasure and happiness, says the limbic system. Meanwhile, half of marriages end in divorce, men are financially destroyed, and many commit suicide. This is powerfully demonstrated in another video I'm linking to called Men's Suicidal Life by Cyber Saint. Men, it's time to stop thinking with your dick. It's time to stop being a slave to your primitive urges and to personally evolve. Now, even if you're committed to resisting your urges, it's not that easy. Your instincts and urges are incredibly hard to overcome. Consider the following scene from the 1984 movie adaptation of Frank Herbert's Dune.
In the book and movie adaptation of Frank Herbert's Dune, Paul Atreides meets the Gamjabar to have his humanity tested. He is forced to put his hand in a box, appropriately called the pain box, that causes him to experience the pain of his skin blistering and burning off of his bones. If he pulls his hand out of the box, as per his instincts, he will be killed by a poison needle held to his neck. In order to prove his humanity, he must resist his instincts and endure the pain. After he passes the test, he removes his hand, and there was no physical damage. It was all in his mind.
Resisting and ultimately transcending your biological urges requires extreme discipline. A person on a diet may struggle against the urge to eat, but the reproductive urge is nearly as powerful as that of survival, and in some cases more powerful. Some animals, including some humans, will literally kill themselves in order to have sex. It is not hopeless, though. You can make things easier by redirecting your urges in other ways. Let us consider the three things that women can offer a man: sex, companionship, and children. Sex is easy to come by, and although casual sex is far less risky than marriage, it's not risk-free. You may still get a woman pregnant or catch an STD. The safest option to avoid any possibility of unwanted pregnancy and STDs is through porn. Obviously, masturbation doesn't feel the same as a real woman, but technology is working to change that with realistic sex toys and virtual reality porn through devices like the Oculus Rift. In Japan, they're even making robots that can simulate sex. Now, although there's a lot of demand for this technology all over the world, society will still shame men who choose this path. But when you consider the divorce and suicide rates, who is really the loser? In regards to companionship, there are several alternatives to a woman. Starting where we finished before, Japan offers a huge selection of relationship simulation games and products. I'm going to link to a couple Gaijin Goomba videos regarding these games, since he specializes in Japanese culture. The links will be in the description. And although this may not sound appealing to many living in the West, I present it as a possible option for those that it may appeal to as a viable alternative. Another obvious alternative is to get a dog. Dogs are called man's best friend for a reason. A dog will be loyal and loving to you without any of the baggage, risks, and bullshit of a woman. If you just want someone to come home to that will smile, be happy to see you, and that will give you love and affection without manipulation, just get a dog. Women also use animals to fill the void of human companionship. This is essentially what the so-called crazy cat ladies are. They are women who want to fill their parental instincts but can't have children because they're ugly, and they fill their homes with cats instead. If you're not a pet person, have a close circle of friends, preferably other MGTOW. Humans are social creatures, and men need companionship. Children are the last thing a woman provides, and is the hardest thing to replace until technology such as artificial wombs and cloning pods. Until then, here are some alternatives to consider, although they do carry some risks. You can simply get married with your eyes open, perhaps treating it like a business partnership like Sandman's parents did. This is the most risky. You're effectively walking into a minefield and you can get pretty screwed, especially given today's legal environment. You could become an anonymous sperm donor if you simply want to propagate your DNA. But this is not risk-free. A sperm donor may be legally forced to pay child support in some states. Yeah, what the fuck, right? Now, studies have shown that having a father and a mother in the home is better for the development of the child than either parent alone. And although this is difficult to do without marriage, it's not impossible. You could have the surrogate mother live in the home with you during the child's early years. But be aware of common law marriage, where you can be legally declared married by the state if you live together, even if you've never actually gotten married. If you have a contract between yourself and the surrogate mother, a judge can tear it up, give custody of your children to the surrogate mother, and force you to pay child support. This option is almost as risky as marriage, but it may be workable depending on your state. Another option is to have two children through surrogacy. Have a daughter first, and the son second. This will allow the son to enjoy the nurturing of his older sister, and hopefully give him some of the developmental advantages of the nurturing of a mother. Although the legal risks are largely negated, you're now a single father of two, which carries its own risks and costs. You really have to ask yourself if you're willing to take all these risks and assume all these costs, simply to make smaller versions of yourself. Well, I hope you found this video helpful and informative. Thank you for everyone that's liked and supported my original video, and for all the support you've given me and my channel. Please like, favorite, comment, subscribe, and share this video with anyone you think it might help. Thank you for watching, and I'll see you next time.